You've pegged yourself as a political comedian and just wondered if you could explain your voice as a comedian and how you developed that.
I don't actually call myself a political comedian. I think I just accept that label at a certain point. Because when I think politics, I start to get sleepy, as two-thirds of Americans apparently do by not voting the other night. So politics doesn't really get the crowds out. You know, I think socio-political, I'll accept that because I think I want to talk about the issues that that divide us and bring us together. I'm a cultural movement guy. You know, I think of myself really as a black guy with an opinion, and I think when black guys have a lot of opinions, then they become political.
Sure.
But yeah, I certainly don't have, you know, so I just have opinions about the world. I think it should be better, and I have some jokes I've written about it. Is that so wrong?
I don't think that's wrong, no.
So, yeah, and I come from a family where talking about the state of the world is just a part of what happens over the, you know, I was going to say over the dinner table, but more really over the TV tray. You know, that was just how I grew up with my mom.
Sure.
Where we talked about that stuff. And so I think as I started doing comedy, I just wanted to be funny, but I was always attracted to issues I really cared a lot about and trying to figure out ways to make them funny.
What really influenced your comedy? Was it a lot of your upbringing and your, like you said, you know, having conversations around the dinner table with your family, or was it other comedians?
I mean, it's all of that. I think, you know, I think everybody likes comedy. You know, it's hard to be like, I was one of those weird kids who liked to laugh, you know. We all like to laugh. We all like to make people laugh. Everybody thinks they're funny, even though several of us aren't funny. So it's just, but in my household, I think because I was an only child, it was me and my mom a lot of time. I really valued making her laugh really hard and really thought that like making people laugh, there was a lot of value in that. Clearly I misunderstood what value meant. There's not a lot of financial value in it all the time, but I really, there's nothing more fun to me or more exciting to do than to make somebody laugh, especially when they're not expecting it. So it was just, I liked laughter, and then it became about, well, I want to be a comedian. That was just, I knew that was a job where you make people laugh. And then just thinking about, after I started doing comedy, well, what type of comedian do I want to be? And that's how I ended up where I'm at. But, you know, I was a big, you know, it's hard to say you were a big fan of Bill Cosby as a kid without getting into a whole other discussion. But as a kid, I did not know about the accusations. I just want to make that clear. But, you know, I was a big Bill Cosby fan, a big Eddie Murphy fan. And as I grew up and then as I started doing comedy, I became a big Bill Hicks fan. And Bill Hicks was the comic, and I think I was like, oh, that's how you're supposed to do it, you know.
So did you find that you were getting frustrated with the world around you and you wanted to make that funny? I guess what I'm asking is, how did you develop that frustration of the world around you into humor?
I think that was my natural coping mechanism. I mean, sometimes now I would sit down and be like, how can I make this funny? But as a kid, I think it was just my natural response to frustration and anger was to try to make myself laugh or make my close friends laugh. I don't think it was anything that I did on purpose. It just was a way to sort of relieve tension or to just sort of make you feel like the world isn't as bad a place as you feel like it is. I think all kids go through that on some level, and they just channel into different things. Some people channel into chess. Some people channel into guitar. I channeled it into being funny. I always say that I'm just the one of my friends who didn't have developed job skills. Like, we were all funny and we were all trying to be funny. It's just I sort of tried to turn into a career.
So as for just speaking more on your career, how did you develop your one-man show and take it on the road? How important do you think it is for comedians to pursue a similar endeavor?
Well, I think it's in the 21st century, it's important for comedians to lift themselves up by their own bootstraps. I think you can't just sit back. There, occasionally, a comic can just be funny in a stand-up comedy situation. And the showbiz will go, we have finally found the one. That happens occasionally, but it doesn't happen that often. But now at this point, it's sort of incumbent on every performer, you know, comic or outside of comedy, to get to make your own gravy, as I like to say. You can't wait for somebody else to make the gravy. You got to make your own gravy.
Absolutely.
And so I think it's just that some people do that with funny YouTube videos, and some people do that with buying videos. I just did it with like, I'm old school. I said, I'm going to run a theater and do a show, and I'm going to do it over and over again until it gets good or until I like it, and then I'm going to try to take it on the road, and that's what happened. I just, you know, it was a very sort of like, you know, something that comics don't like to do is like, I had to put money on the line. I just sort of invested myself financially, which, you know, one reason a lot of us want to be comics is because it can be a pretty lazy art form. Nobody has to know that you didn't really prepare for the show if the show's a good show. But this took actual having to, you know, buy a computer and buy, you know, and get a projector and rent a theater and get a guy to do a poster for me and a lot of stuff like that. And I just sort of basically at that point wasn't even thinking about trying to be successful. I just was like, I want to make something that I want to see.
Sure. So what would you say you're doing differently now in your career than you did when you were first starting?
I'm aware that I need to, that I can't go all in on one thing. I sort of am pursuing all the things that I have time to pursue, which my time is limited because I got two kids and one was just born 2.5 weeks ago.
Yeah, congratulations.
So, thank you. So, you know, I got the easy part. I just received the baby. My wife had the baby. So, I mean, I don't want you to think, I don't want to soak up too much congratulations, but yeah, I have got a new daughter and my second daughter, and it's like, but I really realize I can't just sort of like, I'm just going to do this one thing. So I'm, you know, I'm doing stand-up, I'm starting a podcast a couple days ago, and
yes.
I'm working on some other projects, and just, you know, hopefully I'm going to do a comedy special next year. It's really about just making sure you don't overload your plate. But keeping your plate full because you can't just invest in one thing.
So let's talk. I want to ask you about your podcast. What is it about Denzel Washington that you really love? The name of the podcast, of course, being Denzel Washington is the greatest actor of all time. Period.
I love that you said the name of the podcast. Of course, we just started 2 days ago, sir. We're not the of course state yet. You know, one day we'll be of course This American Life, but not yet.
Right. You know, I try to be on top of things, being a comedy producer myself.
Know about it. no, I mean, it's me and Kevin Avery who do the podcast. Are both comedians. We've been friends for a long time. He wrote on my show Totally Biased, and now he writes with John Oliver. And we sort of, just through being friends, came to the realization that we both basically were in love with Denzel Washington. You know, like, he may say it differently, but that's how I would say it. Like, you know, that Denzel is kind of like my, if my dad's not around, I could put on a Denzel Washington movie and be like, I'm getting some good parenting right now.
would you call so that, just, you would call that your training day, maybe?
Yes, exactly. See, you want to be a guest on the podcast. Yeah, there you go. Denzel Washington to me is the last black actor in Hollywood who has to carry the baton of being an African-American man in addition to being an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he basically took the baton from Sidney Poitier and said, yes, I have to be a good example. I have to do roles that reflect well in the community. I can't be caught up in the club late at night with a woman who's not my wife. Like, he has to sort of do all the, I can't be on TMZ drunk. He's the last black actor in Hollywood to set an example for the community, you know?
Sure.
And to me, that's a really powerful thing and a really admirable thing. He's been able to keep it up for all this time. And he's also a great actor. And like a lot of times, I feel like, you know, as it happens in this country, black people don't always get all the credit they deserve. So I felt like this was our way of going. You know how you think he's great? He's even better than you think he is.
Hmm. Oh.
You know?
Well, hopefully he'll join you on your podcast at some time.
I mean, you know, that's the goal. I mean, you know, we can dream. I just hope he hears about it and isn't mad at us. That's my I hope he listens and comes on the show. But at the basic level, I would hate to do something that made him go, "Oh, what are these people doing?" So, please, Denzel, don't go Alonzo from Training Day on us. We really love you.
Well, that kind of brings me to another question. You've worked with Chris Rock before, and I just wondered, you know, what did you learn from him? How has that kind of helped shape your career a little bit? And, you know, is there any advice that he had given you that you would want to pass on to other aspiring comedians?
We worked closely together for about a year and a half on the show, and I always called him like he was like a foul-mouthed version of Yoda. You know, like he was always sort of dropping these sort of show business lessons and life lessons, but sort of like sometimes they weren't always grammatically correct, and they were usually filthy. You know, like, so it was just the idea that like he just sort of had a lot of knowledge. And I think it'd be hard to figure out what was the one, you know, there was so much, it's hard to go through what would be one thing he said. But the thing I look at him is really his example. Like, he is one of the Chris Rock, much like Denzel Washington, is a very successful person, but nobody realizes how hard he's working to keep that success going. You know, Chris is one of the hardest working people I've ever been around at a point in his life where you feel like you could be like, why are you still working so hard? You've been a zebra in an animated movie. I think, isn't that the time you can retire? You know, like, can't you just sort of relax now? You know, they're selling an animal with your voice and Toys R Us. You're probably covered. But he really cares about his legacy and cares about, and really is still competitive with being one of the country's best comedians. And right now, he just did Saturday Night Live and got, and you know, and had that monologue, and it put him right back square in the public eye again. And I'm like, that's Chris. He's right where he wants to be. And he's got this movie coming up, getting a lot of good reviews. So to me, it's just about, you know, if you're going to be in show business, don't sit back and wait for show business to come to you. It's the thing I said earlier, you have to really work, and you know, across lots of different platforms, because, you know, nobody looked at Chris Rock at one point and said, he should be the voice of a zebra in a movie, but he got himself there.
Sure, sure. So, well, let's talk a little bit about your tour. You've been on the road for a while now, and like you mentioned, you have a newborn and everything, and I know that wasn't necessarily part of the plan before you started touring. But what is it like, you know, being on the road that much? And did you expect the tour to last this long?
Well, I mean, I think we've actually canceled a few of the tour dates for the sake of, like, so I can go home and be with my own family.
Sure.
Because I at one point looked at the tour and how extensive it was, and I was like, if I'm gone from home for three weeks at a time, I might get back home and find out I've been replaced. So I need to be able to go home a little bit. So I unfortunately had to cancel for some cities, but I'll hopefully we'll come back next year. But it's hard. It's hard to. You know, it's hard to be on the road and be away from your family and talk to your wife. And, you know, thankfully I can get pictures and stuff, but it's just, it doesn't make you feel like the best parent. You know, I'm out here, it's good to do the shows. The best time of my day is that hour or so that I'm on stage every night. But, you know, travel is not easy. And, you know, I feel like this is my first act as a bad dad. I feel like I'm already in the hole with my new daughter. So I have to go. So when I get home, I really got to make it up to her, you know. You just don't know when bad dad kicks in with a kid. Like, is it 2 weeks in? Is it 3 weeks in?
You know? Yeah, really. Well, quick side note. My dad was in the Navy, and he missed both my sister and my birth, and he decided to leave the Navy because of that. I hope you won't leave comedy. But
wow. But that's how you make up on the bad dad moments. When you that's an incredible story. That's going to be a Hallmark movie of the week at some point. If you're going to be a good parent, it means not necessarily... You know, people are like, you have to pursue your dreams. Well, if you have kids and you keep your dreams as the number one thing, that's the fast road to bad parenting. And I don't want to be a bad parent. So.
No, that's exactly it. Well, getting back to your show, what do you think audiences can expect to see on your tour?
You know, people who know me from the TV show have a very sort of specific take on me. And I think that my live stand-up show is just more full-on and more totally biased than the show was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I enjoy people coming to see me, and a lot of times I hear people say, like, you're better at this than you were on the TV show. I was like, I know, that's the secret. That the show sort of put me in a little bit of a box, and the TV, and that now that I'm back to doing live stand-up, I can really sort of show people this is what I do. And
sure.
And I don't have to take care of the audience as much as you have to do when you're, quote-unquote, the host of a talk show. So, and also, you know, it's, because I'm not wedded to the camera and there's not a giant screen behind me, I can really write on the spot and interact with the audience. There's always some audience interaction. I've been known to climb off stage and hug people. I really take advantage of the live experience in a way that you just can't do on television, because I really believe that live performance experience doesn't get enough credit in the 21st century.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and as I go to every city, the thing I do is I'll turn on the local news and scan the local websites and, you know, Google that city's name plus racism just to see what's happening. You know, just so I can, and then whatever I learn, I take that to the stage. So I really do want to make sure people know that I know where I'm at and that I'm thinking about the place that I'm at while I'm on stage.
Well, that's exciting to hear. That was one thing I wanted to ask was if there would be anything Milwaukee-based that you would want to include in your act when you come to Milwaukee. We are certainly known as being a state that's pretty politically divided in a lot of ways, and just had a governor's race that was quite a hot topic. So I'm sure there will be plenty of fuel for your fire.
Yes, no, Wisconsin likes to keep it. they like to keep it politically active. You know, I was in Madison for Fighting Bob Fest a few years ago, back with the unions, and everything. So I definitely know that that Milwaukee will have an audience that I think is amenable to what I have to say, which is exciting.
Well, so I wonder, there's a lot of things that you sort of attack in your comedy, and I wonder, what do you think is going well in our world that you don't need to attack?
You know, sometimes sometimes I will do things in my act that aren't, that seem like I'm attacking, but I'm actually just, this is just a sort of back, it's sort of like a Trojan horse way to celebrate things. You know, like, what is it, 33 states now have marriage equality? That's not something that when Obama first went in office, I think was really even on the radar of 90% of Americans. You know, that would be something that this black president, not that he did it, but I think the fact that he at one point said, you know, I'm not against it, that sort of helped clear the way. And I don't think that, not that I'm giving him the credit for, but I just think that, like, that's the thing that as I sit back and look at it, I go, that's not something that we were expecting as a country 6 years ago. And to me, that kind of issue that can turn so quickly gives me hope about other issues that can turn quickly. Like, now let's move on to immigration, you know. So I just think that the fact that the country could move that quickly and about something that you felt like intractable gives me hope for the future.
Well, and comedy is a great way to relate to an audience and really connect with people. How do you think your comedy helps pull people into current events? Do you think a lot of your audience already has an opinion on current events? Do you think you have a role of sort of educating people in a way and letting people know these things are going on?
I mean, I think if I started to approach it as an educator, I would reveal the fact that I only graduated from high school. I'm aware that when I step on stage, that I attract politically aware people, and therefore I'm attracting a lot of people who are smarter than me. So I can only talk about the issue from my understanding of it and my thoughts about it. And because I'm talking about it from my understanding of it, there are people in the room who are being educated on it. But really, I'm just talking about it because this is something I've been thinking about, and I'm really fired up about it and have to talk about it. And I certainly know that people afterwards go, like they said, with totally biased. I use these clips in schools and things, and I appreciate that I didn't know that thing you said. But I'm just approaching it from, this is something I have to talk about. I think if I got too professorial about it, which is how people have described me in the past, then I would lose the fact that we're actually at a comedy show. Right. And if it's not funny, then I'm not doing my job. You know, it's just a really poorly put together speech.
Sure. Actually, I like that.
So for me, it's like I always have to remind myself that, no, I'm a guy who as a kid wanted to be funny. And sometimes I can get, you know, certainly it's easy to get preachy sometimes about things that really, you know, when I talk about Ferguson on stage and you know, issues related to that, I can get real like, but at the end of the rant, there has to be a punchline.
Of course. Yeah. Otherwise, you're just a crazy person with a microphone, I guess.
Exactly. And stand-up crazy has not swept the nation yet. I think stand-up comedy is still a thing.
What would you say is your most exciting moment of the tour so far?
It's really the interacting with the people. Like, as I said, I said it as sort of a throwaway, but, you know, there are moments where I will, like, people in the audience will get sort of, might disagree with something I'm saying or be like, hey, there will be this back-and-forth moment. And I had a back-and-forth moment with a guy in Oakland, actually, which is very near where I live, but still, you know, even in my backyard, there can be some strife sometimes. And we had this back and forth, and we were sort of on the opposite sides of the thing, but we both were sort of being genuine about it. And at the end, I walked off stage, and at the end of the exchange, in the middle of my act, I walked off stage and said, come on, let's hug it out. And we gave him this big hug and got this huge applause from the audience, because it sort of was like modeling discourse, you know, that me and him had a moment that we disagreed about, but it didn't mean that we couldn't still be in the room together and still respect each other and like each other.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed that clip from your show, Totally Biased, where you brought the every white man with you, and you had him.
Anything to say to a white guy.
Yes, yeah. That was a really fun segment. I wonder, is there a lot of influence from that show? Do you get ideas for some of your jokes from some of the interactions from some of those people, or...
That show at this point has been gone from me for a year, but
yes.
It keeps sort of like buffing back up. People still tweet, people will tweet on Facebook and links go around. And so for me, that when that happens, it just reminds me the thing that I'm most proud of is that the stuff that people remember from the show and the stuff that people still share the most is the stuff that I was the most into in the first place. there's definitely stuff from that show where I'd be like, that if it was like the hottest stuff, I'd be like, oh no, not that one. But it sort of reminds me that, okay, I'm on the right track. If that's the stuff that people like and that's stuff that I like, then I should just keep going in that direction.
Sure. Well, what do you have planned for the future?
Well, hopefully the plan is that at the end of this tour, there will be some sort of recording, a document to record it. It could be a CD or a comedy special. We're still figuring that out. But certainly, if you can't get to the tour of Milwaukee or other places where I'm going, my goal after the TV show was to really sort of show people. I'm a stand-up comedian, in case you didn't realize that. And I really, stand-up comedy is important to me, so I really want to document what I'm doing right now so that, people can enjoy it even if they can't come see me live.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about you or the tour? Or?
If they're familiar with me, I'm taller than they think I am.
Good to know.
Yeah. And also that, yeah, and if they have friends in other places, the tour's pretty expensive, so they can let other people know that I'll be coming somewhere near their town, unless their town is in Florida. I'm not going to Florida, but other than that, I'll be on the road.
Fair enough. We look forward to seeing you here in Milwaukee. Thank you again. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for talking to me.